And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 216. My guest today, David Lewis, co-director, co-writer of the new film, Fantasy A Gets a Mattress. Folks, you may have heard of this film. It's becoming a Seattle cultural phenomenon, one might say. It's kind of crazy. This thing is blowing up everywhere, selling out small theaters around the city. It's about a guy named Fantasy A trying to get a mattress. The title gives it all. Fantasy A is a real person in Seattle who stars in this film, but it's a fictional story. And David Lewis is an old friend of mine from Comedy Underground days. He was an open mic comic there, and I knew him a little bit. Only ever saw him there, but when he reached out to me about this film to talk about it, and it took me a while to watch it, but finally I did, and I was delighted. I was delighted at the independence, the guerrilla-ness, the can-do attitude of this film. It is low budget, guerrilla. I have lots of thoughts on it. And I was like, I have to find out where this film came from, what inspired this, how they did it. So, I mean, you'll be the judge on it. Yeah. I think you will see more about this film out, and you'll have to check a screening out. It's pretty amazing what this is doing around town. We need more people who are willing to just pick up a camera and go and do art for art's sake. And David touches in on that. So this is an interview episode, a seven questions episode. I do ask him the world famous seven questions after talking about the film a little bit. So look forward to that. Short and sweet today. That's what it is. So I want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 216. Seven questions with David Lewis, co-writer, co-director of Fantasy A Gets a Mattress. David, we have a long sordid history.
We do. Back when the Comedy Underground still existed.
Back in the underground. My favorite David Lewis story is when you told me you got cast in a play and you're going to make $75 a night. And I said, are you sure that's not for the whole run? And you're like, what? I loved your face because you had this idea that you had found this secret stash of money that nobody knows about.
No, there was more to the story than that. The guy thought that he would act. The guy who was putting it on thought he would be able to do 75 a night.
Oh, wow. So
he thought because the cast of the play was so big, he thought everyone would be bringing people in and he was going to make a lot of money that way. And I'd never done it before. And then he also thought the other plan that he wound up not being able to do was he was going to have an understudy for like every member of the cast and then have the understudies also all do the play. So he was going to get these big crowds coming in. What? And I thought he knew what he was doing because he owned the theater. It turned out he owned the theater because no one would put on his plays.
That's funny. I like that. The optimism of theater. Wow.
Yeah, well,
an understudy in every...
The play was terrible, by the way.
Was it? Was that your first venture into this side?
That was my first play. The thing about the big cast, there would always be more people on stage than in the audience. And then an intermission, like almost everyone in the audience would leave. But the guy came to every show who wrote it, and he would laugh at every joke every night. That's so it was like putting on this huge production for one crazy guy who bought a theater. Totally worth it.
You know what? I can only laugh because I've been through those myself. So that type of thing. and it is they are a joy that you will remember. Like, I will always remember directing a staged reading that was outside the bathroom of a teriyaki restaurant, and that I somehow hustled these poor actors into doing with me, not realizing quite what we were doing.
Was the stage reading something you wrote, or was it like a piece you were working on with someone else?
I was involved in this thing called Play Cafe with Driftwood Players, that they would like go to like breakfast spots, and we do staged readings of stuff. And so it was in the early stages of it. And so I was given a script it was to help develop the writer, kind of, too. Like, it was avant-garde, but we would just do staged readings. We wouldn't do, and some of them we could barely move, right? So it was really, we'd get together and read a few times and then go perform it. It wasn't like meant to be a production.
Well, I remember when there was I remember Driftwood Players. There used to be a lot of that stuff around Seattle where you could just go and do like a reading like that. Yeah. Now, even finding that stuff is like impossible now.
Especially post COVID, you know, people are a lot more careful.
Yeah, post COVID, it's like.
So,
and there's a lot of people now, they would hear like, whoa, reading outside a teriyaki bathroom, man, you made it.
Oh, now it's stand-up comedy. That's where it would happen now. Hey, so did COVID have anything to do with you getting involved in this film? Was this?
No, I'd actually been working with Fantasy A since 2016. COVID did help with the movie because Fantasy A is a city employee, so he had a lot of time, paid time off during COVID where we could shoot.
Well, that's nice. So, okay, I need to know, how did this, like, was this movie your idea or was it his idea? You were the writer, right? Writer director.
Yeah, I was a co-writer director. My friend Noah Sofian, we worked on it together. We have almost like no memory of writing it because we had to do a lot of rewrites, like day of, frequently, depending on if someone dropped out or if something changed. So it was like, oh, we need to totally redo the scene. So I remember writing it, and he remembers writing it. We just don't remember when or what exactly we were doing at the time. That's why the movie has such an interesting dreamlike quality.
I mean, what made you want to write this to begin with? What was the impetus to?
Oh, like way back in 2014, I interviewed Fantasy A for a podcast.
Okay.
And I saw how good he was with the microphone, where he literally like in no way changes his personality at all if he's like working with technology or just talking to you. Yeah. So I knew from that he would be good at film acting because he doesn't like try to act. Like, he just takes the lines and he says them like how he would say them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this guy should be in a movie. So we did a short film back then. It was pretty popular. Fantasy A gets Jax. It was also at the film forum, like local sightings. We realized he had to be in a feature. So we hit him up again to do Fantasy A Gets a Mattress.
So, I mean, so was it from you, or did he say like, I want a movie?
Oh yeah. Well, he said a lot of the movie was based on his memoir and his novel. A lot of the lines come from that.
He has a novel.
He has a novel, Life in the World of Gabe Fabens and Sage the Scholar. In high school, two friends of his asked him to write a novel about them. And so he wrote a novel where a windstorm kills all the men in Seattle and his friend has to repopulate the world like Genghis Khan. It is one of the best Seattle novels ever written. We inhaled that when working on the movie. And took lines from it, and amazing book. And then the memoir is about his life up to graduating from high school, which also has a lot of great stuff in it.
The film, this is taking on, it feels like this is a guerrilla hit. Like, is it your marketing genius? What is it that you're selling out show? I mean, it's it's not like you're selling out Paramount, but you are selling out shows regardless. Like, you're not papering these, right? This is not a papered. This is the parlor, right?
The posters?
No, like comedy clubs. They'll just like hand out tickets to people to get them in the door, right? Like this is.
Oh no, no, we sell the tickets. We sold out. Yeah, sold out 20 shows at the Beacon. Sold out Folklife SIFF Film Center. Sold out 3 shows at the Grand Illusion. At the Grand Illusion, we had a line wrapped around the block. We had to turn away like 50 people who wanted tickets.
Wait, you did it at the Grand Illusion as well? Like a big.
Yeah,
that's a big.
And they want to bring us back too. Yeah, it was. 3 sold out shows. But one big trick is you got to make it into an event. You got to, like, if someone is coming out to see a movie, it's like you got to do stuff they couldn't just do on streaming. So we always have Fantasy A there. We have masks with his face on it. We hand out. We have Fantasy A fun bucks. You get a picture with the mattress. He throws marshmallows into the audience. We make sure it's the kind of thing you see the movie, you'll tell people you were at the movie, and that spreads word of mouth. So, I mean, as you know, like Seattle is not a big city.
What is the thrill? Like, I mean, what do you think is drawing the people in? Like,
what is a good movie that draws people in? It's different. It's funny. And a lot of Fantasy A has worked something like 100 jobs, so everyone in the city knows him personally.
Right.
So that helps too. We had his preschool teacher show up to one of the Grand Illusion screenings. She said she didn't even know about Fantasy A's rap career or anything. She was just reading the Seattle Times and saw the name Alexander Hubbard in a movie review. And she was like, wait, I was his preschool teacher like 25 years ago. And then she came to see the movie.
He's like a local. Was he a local celebrity before? I mean, is it just from work or is it like he really was a rapper, right?
Still is. He's rapper. He's been a rapper, novelist, actor. I'm trying to think what else. He's done a lot of stuff, but.
Okay. And then you edited the film too, or did you have an editor?
Mostly my friend Noah did more of the editing. I was there for the editing, and what we would do is he would do the editing, and then to keep fresh eyes, I would look at the edits after he did them to see if like what needed to be tweaked, because you kind of get editing blindness when working on like a feature film when you do like over and over again. I did a bit of the editing. He did most of it though.
Well, the film's a trip. The film is a trip. Like I was not on drugs or anything, but I did feel like I was, maybe.
One of the guys who did the music for the movie told us that before he got sober, he used to take mushrooms and listen to Fantasy A's whole library.
Yeah.
He just put Fantasy A on his playlist. Because Fantasy A speaks very slowly. A lot of stoners enjoy him. He has that like Bob Ross kind of quality.
Okay.
He's got a lot of like druggies who know all of his songs and are giant Fantasy A fans.
And you have a comedian in the film as well.
Or Chris?
Chris. I know Chris.
Yeah, Chris was great.
I was like, that was a pleasant surprise. I had no idea that he was in it. And I just saw like, I was like, wait, hold on a second. You said you had people not show up sometimes. Were they like, you mean like, was it extras or was it just because of scheduling? Like people
usually extras. We only had one we also with for like a COVID movie, we really lucked out that no one moved away from Seattle while filming and no one like had like a life crisis realization where they had to like, you know, completely change everything and then just drop movies. We only had one person who we never even actually like filmed with, who just did some rehearsals, who wound up dropping out entirely. But we had stuff like, we had scenes like at the skate park where we planned on a lot of extras being there.
Yeah.
Knowing one guy who could skateboard showed up, so we had to like rewrite stuff for that.
Okay. Now, how did you do the casting other than yourself?
Accretion.
Accretion?
Yeah, like a lot of it was just we had a fantasy A. The guy who plays Xander Aaron used to be my manager at TJ Maxx. Logic Amen, who plays Ramon. He was a stand-up, and he was also my friend Noah's middle school chess club coach. And then they just recommended people they knew, and it kind of spread out that way.
Did you not? So you never wanted to put like an acting call out for like, I don't know, trained actors? Like, was it?
No.
No? Why? Now, was that part because you wanted the grittiness of real life, or what?
We wanted the grittiness of, I wouldn't even say the grittiness. We wanted them. I mean, we definitely wanted, you know, like real people, you know, who didn't seem like they were like playing parts in the movie.
Okay.
And we also like, we knew who we wanted. Like, a lot of people we knew. So we didn't really feel any, like, also we wrote the roles for the people. Like, there are people we knew, and we wrote the roles that we thought would like suit their personalities. So we really never had need for professional actors or to do a casting call. So whenever we needed someone to do the role, we just asked the people in the movie if they knew anybody.
Do you know anybody? I'm working hard out here trying to get cast in things. And then to find
out, casting all kinds of stuff. I see you on TV.
To find out directors are just like, hey, anyone know a guy that could do this?
What? And have you ever seen that John Landis movie Into the Night with Michelle Pfeiffer?
Like maybe forever ago.
Yeah, John Landis said Michelle Pfeiffer's agent just kept hounding him. Like, you got to get Michelle Pfeiffer in the movie. And John Landis kept saying, I don't want Michelle Pfeiffer. I don't want Michelle Pfeiffer. I don't want Michelle Pfeiffer. And then he finally, because the guy kept pressuring him, he said, okay, saw the screen test, realized she was perfect. Mm-hmm. And John Landis said, that was the only time in his entire career that an agent ever got work for their client. Because normally directors and producers already know going into the project who they want.
Right.
I think it was way back. I think it was Cecil B. DeMille that said casting calls are just about a director's ego.
Well, I mean, I'm a director too. Like, you don't always know who you want. You don't know who's available. You don't know.
Oh yeah.
And casting directors, you know, like to find out, hey, I need, like, if, what if someone said, okay, someone said, I want to make this a big budget, but we're going to have somebody play Fantasy A. Would you like say, no, thank you, Hollywood?
I mean, depends on how big the budget is. Like, no, that would like defeat a lot of the point. Like, who would play him? Who would we get with our big budget, Silas? Who do you see in Fantasy A?
I don't know. What's his name from Saturday Night Live? Who's the nice guy? They're a dead ringer. What's his name? He just did the stand-up thing that was going around town everywhere. The black guy, the only black guy on the show.
Keenan.
Yeah.
I would love to work with Keaton Thompson. I would make him Fantasy A's dad. Only Fantasy A can play Fantasy A.
Only Fantasy A can play. So what? Okay, so you said you think they would defeat. What is the point of the film? What is the point?
To have a good time, Silas. That's the point of the movie.
For the audience?
Yeah, to go out to the theater and enjoy yourself.
So when they leave and they're sitting back later that night thinking about, okay, then
you
I guess.
I'm glad you actually brought up that question about the point. Because I've been there's a German writer, Walter Benjamin. He had a really good point. He said when art forms lose their social relevance, enjoyment is replaced with criticism. So like when art forms are like really socially relevant, like rock shows, like in that Detroit Rock City, no one thinks, what is the purpose of the Kiss concert? How does this value the community that we want these tickets to the show? They all just want to go see the show. And then as art forms lose their social relevance, people more start like Like, I would give, like, the example of, like, poetry. Like, 100 years ago, there were, like, movie adaptations of poems. It would be, like, Casey at the Bat, the movie. Because everyone loved poetry. Yeah. And then as less people read poetry, it more becomes about studying poetry. And what is the role of the poet in society? But our movie is so socially relevant, and we're turning away 50 people like at screenings. It's so much the thing in Seattle now. We really don't have to focus on the point or purpose of it because everyone loves Fantasy A.
But okay, as an artist, though, I mean, don't you, you didn't have a. Did you write it because I just want to have a good time, or was there something that you wanted to say?
I love movies. that was why I wanted to make it. A lot of it, we went scene by scene. It was, I knew. You know what I'd say I wanted to say? Because we wrote the roles for the people we knew. I would say, I want to say, there's a lot of unseen talent in Seattle, and people should really see all these talented people out there. And I mean, like, my manager at TJ Maxx, Aaron, everyone thinks they've seen him in movies before. They're like, I'm sure I've seen that guy in something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, he's not a professional actor. And I would say, I mean, and you've seen in stand up and acting, a lot of like the most talented people out there are stocking shelves. And yeah, I would say you should really be looking at all this underutilized talent out there. That's what I wanted to say with the movie.
I think you'd have a lot of artists in the town agree with that. That, like, I mean, it's funny. So we're, you know, you're this film is in discussion at the Seattle Film Critics Society in our new Pacific Northwest Award. It started last year, right? It's in discussion about what this film is to people. Like, is it like it's, I mean, it is an amazing as far as my point to them was, having been a stand-up comic in this town and an artist and a theater person and such, it is so hard to get people to go out to watch you, even though they've said, I really want to watch you and do something, right? I don't care how big the house is. The fact that you can say you've sold out these things multiple times, right, is sort of phenomenal. That to get people just to keep coming out and to get more people to say, yeah, I want to be part of that. Because then I go to movies that I want to see and there's nobody in the theater, right? Like, it's so I'm like, this is impressive. Like, this has taken on a life. This is fringe filmmaking, right? It's like, this is fringe. Like, this isn't a movie studio movie. I'm not.
No.
Yeah. I mean, the special effects. Lucasfilms would not put that on, right?
Yeah, it was actually our special effects guy's like first major project.
Nice. So. Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
But like, so I'm rooting for this. I brought it to the group originally. It's funny, I brought it to the group thinking like, hey, I've got a secret movie that you don't know about that's gonna happen. And it was I feel like I did get the early word on it. And then other people just started hearing about it. And they're like, what is going on with this movie? Like, I think they're frustrated because they recommend movies to people all the time and they can't, you know, they don't go see it. And then this movie is just
the Stranger back into print just to review this movie.
Wait, for real?
Yeah. The AP Arts edition. They brought back the fall arts issue and it's the first review in it. Said, spare no expense. We gotta review this movie. And they, bam.
That is
amazing.
Fantastic. I love that. So I'm hoping that you know, because if you become one of the five nominees, you know, then you're gonna be reached out to by potentially by SIFF to come play at their theater, be part of some screenings there. Like they're hoping to showcase a bunch of the films that are nominated this year. So as long as we can get,
you're also the first person to know this because the rest of the crew is not awake yet. And I just got the email. Yep. We just won the best narrative feature award at local sightings. So you are like the first person to be informed of that.
Are you going to, did they announce, are they going to announce that? Do I have to, where, how long do I have to hold that secret?
They sent the email. They didn't say anything about holding the secret. They said they'll be announcing it on social media soon. I'm pretty sure it's not secret because they didn't say, like, don't tell anybody. Okay.
All right.
But
because I want to drop this fast while the iron's hot. Like, I'm not holding on to this interview for 3 weeks. No, I'm like, how, when can
drop
I,
it.
Is my voice going to come back today so I can do an intro? but hey, I have some questions for you because the first time people come on this show as a guest, I have 7 questions that I ask all of them. It's Silas Lindenstein's world famous 7 questions. And are you ready to answer those?
I am ready.
Okay. Number 1. What are you most nerdy about?
I would more say obsessive than nerdy, but
tomato tomato.
Seattle history.
You have a couple books, right?
Yeah, I do. I have a couple books on Seattle history.
Okay. That could be a whole nother podcast. I want to know about some of the illicit stuff that I've heard about. Holy crap. I wonder if you're people have recommended books to me before. And I wonder, like, what if that's your book that they recommend?
Was it about Bigfoot?
No.
I do a Seattle history through Bigfoot. Evergreen 8.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll check that out. All right. Number 2. What's something that you love to eat?
Crab. Love crab.
Crab? Like,
do you say love to eat or hate?
Eat. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Good. Yeah, crab. Yeah, love to eat crab.
What's a do you have a specific type of crab?
Dungeness crab.
The Dungeness.
It's got that real ocean taste in it.
Okay, so I've been pronouncing this wrong the whole time. You said
Dungeness. How do you say it?
Dungeness.
I say Dungeness. I think both are acceptable.
Okay. Well, because I'm not from here, I would bow to your referral of how to say it. And you're a Seattle history expert. So I don't know.
That'd be more Alaska than in Seattle. Maybe I've been pronouncing it wrong.
I'm from Boston. I say the wrong things all the time here sometimes. All right. Number 3. What's something that you love to drink?
Oh, bourbon.
Well, bourbon. Do you have a certain kind?
I like Woodford Reserve. It has a nice vanilla kind of flavor too.
Does whiskey go? Whiskey doesn't go with crab, right? That's not a good. Seems like
I could make
overpower.
It go with crab. I'd be willing to combine that.
I got so excited about how to pronounce Dungeness. I forgot to I am obsessed. My daughter, we love crab so much. Like, I wish it had health benefits. Like, because I would eat, I'd have that as an excuse to eat.
That'd be nice.
Weekly.
I wish whiskey had health benefits.
Well, you know, it keeps you off the street, I think.
It does.
Maybe. So that could be a benefit. All right. Number 4. What kind of music do you love?
Oh, I go through a lot of moods with that. When embarrassing myself at karaoke, I enjoy Elvis.
All right.
It's I would not recommend it. I would need to be really drunk to do it. But yeah, I enjoy Elvis. I like a lot of 80s music, Talking Heads, kind of ear candy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'm like trying to picture you right now singing Jailhouse Rock or something. I gotta get a hold of that.
Not many have seen it recently, but it at the Bremerton Film Festival, I got drunk enough to do a duet with a guy at the festival, and it was
to what song? To what song?
To what song? I will never say. It was
Ebony and Ivory.
Cringy.
No. Okay.
That would have been I will say, for Bremerton, apparently the official beer of Bremerton is a Filipino beer called Red Pony, and that stuff is like malt liquor. So
okay.
I salute it.
Was there a Fantasy A screening? there? Is that why you went?
It was. Yeah, it was the Bremerton Film Festival. The Freaks Come Out at Night by Houdini, and he stole the show. Amazing performance by him.
Okay. Wow. That's awesome. Okay. Number five. What do you love to create?
Movies. Advertising.
You love to create advertising?
I love experimenting with marketing. I think it's a really underrated art form. And I'm always blown away by the amount of people who will put a lot into like creating other projects and then will in no way promote it. Or will like refuse to promote
it. Yeah.
Like with the Fantasy A movie, like I love, we work on like the poster campaigns. We did the Don't Draw On This campaign where it's just the blank mattress that you can draw graffiti on, and we weed post. Did those, and we did cool montages of all the different graffiti on the posters.
But you said don't draw on this, so was there a sign that said don't draw on this?
Yeah, it was Fancy pushing like the white mattress, and then above the mattress it says don't draw on this,
and so people like, would
enticing you to draw on it. And then we did like montages of the graffiti, and that a lot of graffiti people came to see the movie because of that. It like spread the word in the community that it's this real graffiti kind of movie. And that was fun.
That's clever.
I love to create marketing.
You said create films to first though. Like, have you done a lot more? I thought this was your first. I mean,
a feature film takes a lot of time. We're working on some new screenplays now. Just short films. This is my only feature.
Okay. Nice. Number six. What's a game you love to play?
I think video games reached their peak with Star Fox 64.
Okay.
I think that's the best game ever created. And I don't know why they made video games after it. It really seemed to exhaust the art form.
Do you still play it?
When I'm around one, I don't own a game console. I sold the game.
Yeah. What about board games? I mean, it doesn't have to be a video game.
Do you ever go to Cosmo? I used to work in an escape room, and we had Cosmo Coffee right around the corner. And me and my coworkers used to like to go there and try all of like the random board games that they have there, like the new one. Okay. I really like that boss battle game. It's like that card game, like an old NES game. What's it? Dungeon? Well, I think it's called Boss Battle, Dungeon Boss, whatever
Dungeon
it's called.
Boss? Dungeon That's Boss, a- I think.
Yeah. Yeah, Dungeon Boss. That's a fun one. I like that.
Okay. You had a job. You think Fantasy A's had a lot of jobs. You have every story you start is like used to work at this place. And then I like that.
Yeah, I could. I can also honestly say a lot of the places I've worked, I worked there until they went out of business. It's the true like 2010s job experience.
Totally just drove out of. Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess a lot of startups.
Yeah, like huge like layoffs. Yeah.
All right, last question, number seven. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
I would be fine if it was Fantasy A gets a mattress. I would like to do more movies, but I'm honestly happy enough with this movie that like all those like Vincent Gallo, who really has only made like one movie anyone watches and is still considered a filmmaker. Yeah. I would totally be fine if Fantasy A gets a mattress was the thing I was remembered for.
Okay. All right. Well, that's great. I'm going to presume that's honest and not you using marketing on the seven questions to push up your thing.
I was also looking at the poster when you asked that question. Yeah. So it's like right behind you. And I was like, man, that's a nice look.
Well, good. Well, David Lewis, co-director, co-writer of Fantasy A Gets a Mattress. Thank you for coming on the show. Letting me know about it. I feel honored. I feel honored that you reached out, that you remembered me. Let's be real, that you just remembered I existed. and we're like, hey,
I have to.
Here's a movie person.
Yeah, and every time I watch Jeopardy, I see you in the Bartels ad. And so like,
nice. I'm out here. I'm out there now, folks.
You can't forget. And I'm like, I know that guy. Yeah. So can't forget you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. And thank you, listeners. Check out Fantasy Gets a Mattress. I mean, I think it's playing. I just saw it when I Googled it. I just saw it was playing at Grand Cinema again.
Central Cinema. Central Cinema. Week there.
Central Cinema. Yeah. Look for it. I'm sure it's going to just keep going and going until 20th, you know, till Fox picks it up. Or
yeah, our distribution offers have gone from insult to joke. So we're steadily getting up. Better.
All right. Hey, yeah, progress is progress.
It's progress.